Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to The Naturalist Capitalist. This is your host, Reed Coverdale. For episode 107, I am joined by my friend David Feit and John Molnar. We talk about what we see as a viable future for the Libertarian Party, and we also talk about how our mindset has shifted over the last year. I hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. Hopefully this works better this time. That little bit in the intro where Ryan Dawson asks, is Reed sitting very still? Did his phone go out? Those instances happen again. So we'll see what happens. I'm using my iPad right now because it has LTE service because my internet at home isn't working well, which I know surprises all of you. Mr. Technical difficulty over here. But yeah, we'll just start from the top again. I'm here with my friends David Feit and John Molnar. I'm wearing John's shirt.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, the title of this show is Liberty Alive Again? So all three of us were invested in the Libertarian Party in 2020, and it was less than what we had hoped we would get out of it, I'd say, for all three of us. I didn't join until last year because I thought the party was a joke. And 2020 kind of reaffirmed my suspicions of that possibility. And after the election, I started looking in other places. I was just reaching out to anyone who had any sort of common ground with me, just trying to get any sort of movement started. And you know, it sort of turned into like this bottom unity thing. And then I met up with people like Magnus Panvidya, who were actually actively trying to make stuff like that happen. And I was trying to get people from different movements to come together, and it just wasn't happening. And, the Libertarian Party was just eating itself alive as per usual. So I kind of put that on the back burner. I was more interested in like the Articles of Unity or something, even though Libertarian Party holds my beliefs closer than anyone else. But then in the last few months, I've actually become hopeful that things can turn around, and I'm all in again, and I'm just kind of pushing on the Libertarian Party again. But David, what about you? What was your what did you think of how 2020 went? Did you lose faith in the Libertarian Party, and where do you stand now?
So 2020, I already had lost a decent chunk of faith in the Libertarian Party. There's a reason that I worked for Tulsi Gabbard and for Young Americans for Liberty. And then in October and November and even September, I gave up on electoral politics completely and was working exclusively on ballot initiatives. So I had already kind of lost faith in electoral politics. The 2020 election results just kind of confirmed that for me. But like not completely, you know, I was still like, I'm still a little bit delusional. There's still just like that little bit there. So thanks to that little bit of delusion, I joined. I actually like became a more active member of the Libertarian Party this year. I joined my state committee in January. I now sit on like five or six subcommittees. I'm also the county chair. I'm the vice chair for the youth caucus. I'm the state coordinator for the pragmatist caucus. You know, I'm actually like doing a bunch of shit. Doing all of that and getting to experience all of the other people in the party has not really reaffirmed any confidence in the party. So at least not in New York. So that's really where I'm struggling right now, is that the New York State Party is a joke. A little bit like there are some serious issues, and like we have a 52 person state committee. Like just imagine that. Yeah. Like New Hampshire was struggling to find a treasurer, which is like their fourth position out of like seven, right? We have a 52 person committee. It's just ridiculous. So yeah, it's a clusterfuck, and that's made me not super confident, but I've seen what's going on in other states like Arizona, like New Hampshire, like Oklahoma, like Washington. Are we going to talk about that tonight?
I don't know. I mean, it's a timely subject, so.
Right. It is. Our boys lost.
Yeah.
I'm sad. I was actually hopeful. Jesse did a good amount of outreach, so I was actually pretty hopeful that he was going to at least come away with some sizable chunk.
See, I was glad to see the Mises Caucus.
I didn't mean to derail your show.
No, it's fine. But I was glad to see them take over as much as they did, just because of how the initiation of aggression that came against them a couple months ago. That was just kind of like, what are you doing? Like, why are you saying this? I mean, if you want to create a climate in which a takeover gains sympathy, then that's what you do. So, you know, it was kind of funny to see how it played out, but
yeah.
No, I just sat back and
what's that?
I just sat back and watched the whole thing unfold. Just like, oh yeah, let me grab some popcorn right quick. Like, good entertainment. That's about it. I don't live in Nevada. I don't give a shit.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me like Nevada should be the libertarian state. It's kind of like the no laws state. But they've sucked. Like, I've driven through there a few times. The coronavirus has taken them pretty hard. Like, they're they had like all the mandates, and it's the only place that I've been that they're super hard on restrictions. Like, they go after you if you go in someplace without a mask or something. Like, guard will come like escort you out. It's crazy. But but what about you, John? You actually ran for the district that I live in for Congress, and what was your takeaway from how everything went?
Yeah, unfortunately I ran. No, it was a good experience on running. It showed me a lot of stuff about what it's like to campaign. Got to get out there and talk to a lot of people. But even before that, you know, I was kind of in the same boat of not really wanting to make that jump to libertarian, because I saw the party as a bit of a joke and not to be taken seriously in the way they conduct. And that's what I kept hearing a lot during the campaign is, oh, well, libertarians would be great to vote for you, but you never win because your party's a joke. So it gets really frustrating when that kind of tends to be what you hear a lot of the time. Like, yeah, the stuff you're talking about would be good, but the party's a joke. And the party just keeps continuing on with the joke. Like, eventually you got to kill the joke and start to act serious and take things seriously. I mean, especially right now when we're talking about, a lot of us seem to have the same kind of feeling of we're facing some of the most tyranny in this country that we've seen since the British were in control, and we're continuing it with a joke instead of taking this seriously and actually making that push for once to really start making that effort and those changes when we're under more pressure than ever before. Yes, that'll burn you out real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, so you started as a Republican, right, when you were running?
Yeah, I started as a Republican because I had the same type of thinking as what's his name? Eric
Brinke.
Yes, because I had the same thought process when I first started, is like, hey, let's go into the Republican Party and try and run as a Republican, fix it from the inside. And then as I was going through the campaign and I started getting close to the primaries, I realized real quick there's no fucking way they were going to let me through the primaries. So I was like, okay, well, pretty much more libertarian anyways. It's what I keep hearing every time I'm talking to people. So I called up the Libertarian Party and said, hey, like, this is what I think. This is my platform that I'm running on. Can I just bring that over here? And like, yeah, that sounds good. Come on over. So made the switch. And I still think that running libertarian is better than running Republican or Democrat, going to either of the two major parties. But that whole, the Libertarian Party doesn't conduct itself in a manner that the public can see as being serious, to consider them as an actual contender holds any type of good candidate back just in and of itself. It makes a huge hill to have to climb up. And especially when, like, I did my campaign pretty much no financing on my, most of the part on my own. And then, like, as a political nobody, like, that was a huge challenge to overcome. Having a party that can't be taken seriously by the public made it a much bigger challenge than it should have been.
Yeah, so what was making the party look stupid in Utah? Was it just the national party as people knew it, or was it some specific things that they were doing in Utah in 2020?
So nothing in particular with Utah. It's just kind of the perception people have about libertarians. You got some of the candidates out there that have been on in the public's eye that look a little more crazy to them in the way they present themselves. They don't take themselves quite as seriously. And so it gets portrayed as we're a joke party. Right. And on top of that, the Libertarian Party hasn't really made much headway on the elections, and they don't really care to make that kind of headway to actually win rather than just running to spread a message. And that gets taken as libertarians don't run serious campaigns. They're just here to proselytize. So not necessarily one thing in particular. I mean, there's some incidences that I would hear occasionally, but it was more from like the political nerds from the right or the left rather than just your average person.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were, I mean, you weren't a moderate candidate by any stretch. I mean, I remember you kind of stuck out because you were the atheist who was, you know, staunchly against any mandates on religious houses of worship. And you were the only guy really saying like, these people should be allowed to go to church if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're taking up my fishing holes on Sunday, man. Get them back in church.
Oh, man. But, I mean, so you didn't moderate at all, but you just weren't an idiot. Like, you just knew how to talk to people. I mean, I feel like people think you either have to be a full-blown retard or you have to be, like, a watered-down Republican or Democrat to win. It's like, no, you can be extreme and you can be radical, but you just need to know how to communicate. And that seems, I like to say libertarians are fiscally conservative and socially awkward, you know. They're not good at relating to other people.
Yeah,
some are good.
Yeah, I mean, but you were
most
good at talking to people, right? I mean, it seems like you connected with people who weren't libertarians pretty well, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I keep hearing. I always feel like I'm really socially awkward. I mean, I'm pretty introverted naturally. And so for me, getting up on stages and talking to other people and strangers all day, like, really makes me uncomfortable. But I mean, it seems like I did a good job. I mean, I got 3.5% of the vote. I beat the spread by over 3 times. It was my first campaign with no financing. So I thought I did pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Utah has any real big libertarian party to be able to pull votes from, so you got to pull from Republicans and Democrats or one or the other to win.
Yeah, so when I joined the party, it was about I guess I didn't actually join until it was like August, I think, when I officially joined. But when I first started really looking into it, it was like 13 months ago now, and there was this split between like pragmatist and radical messaging. And the guy that I saw doing the radical messaging was Jacob Hornberger. And the guy that I saw doing the quote unquote pragmatist messaging was Justin Amash. And I did agree that his first interview he did on MSNBC or whatever, it wasn't that impressive. But in general, he was just way more palatable than Hornberger, because Hornberger was not, he was not doing what, like, I talked about with Tom Woods the other day, and what I talk about with Dave a lot, and what I talk about with a lot of people from the Mises Caucus who say we need to stress the important issues. He was stressing literally every issue and putting them all at the same level. Like, getting rid of Medicaid was just as important as ending the lockdowns, or just as important as ending, or almost more important. Like, he would just rail it all up to 100. So I was like, okay, if this is radicalism, then it's dumb. Because I was grouping him with what's his face, who was saying that, you know, we shouldn't have driver's licenses, next we're gonna have licenses to put toast in our own damn toasters. Like, I was kind of grouping all of the radicals into that style libertarian. I was like, that's not what we can be. We can't be that. So I thought the pragmatists were more about having a message that resonated with people. But then the more I hung around, I saw that a lot of them were kind of boring and just didn't really want to push anything extreme ever. And I was like, well, I don't really like either of these things. And lately I've found people who want to be radical on the important issues, and then the side burner issues, you can still be principled on them, but don't make them your front runner issues. You know, like, let them kind of fall on the wayside. If someone asks you about them, don't lie, don't moderate your message, tell them what you think, but you don't need to make those the center of your campaign. Any comments on that from either of you? Or
go for it.
Yeah, so I mean, a good example of that one is like the whole defund the police conversation that was going on. I mean, that happened during my campaign, and I took a much different approach than what I was seeing all around me. You had one side that wanted to completely defund the police, and then the other side that wanted to strengthen the police and back the blue. And I was sitting there kind of in the middle going, don't defund the police, demilitarize. Like, get rid of the weapons transfers from the military to law enforcement, and civil asset forfeiture, and qualified immunity, and the war on drugs. And then a lot of these problems get solved. We don't need to get rid of the police altogether so much as we need to demilitarize. Because like one of my senior NCOs used to say when I was in the Army, is that a military needs a target. And when you militarize the police, the citizens by necessity become the enemy.
Yep.
And when I talk about it like that to your regular everyday person, it was suddenly, okay, that makes sense. But wait a minute, you said get rid of the transfer of military equipment to law enforcement, so they can't have AR-15s. And that was real easy because I was in the military, and I just go, no, they can have AR-15s because that's a civilian weapon. The military is an M4. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they were okay with it. So,
yeah, I mean, the other thing is, like, you can have the radical end position. Like, I do eventually want to get rid of the police as a government institution, but you can also read the room for what you're going to be able to get done at a given time. So if you come in just preaching, you know, idealism and perfectionism becomes very similar to speaking platitudes at a certain point. Like, there's not really a difference because they're both useless talking points that just appeal to people that aren't really going to apply any direct change. So a lot of people hate when someone speaks boring platitudes and they want to hear radical perfectionism. And it's like, okay, you know, you're both wrong. You can be radical, yep, and want an end goal, but you can also realize where you are on the timeline and what you can get done at a certain time.
Yeah. I think the important distinction is, like, is the race winnable? You know, if we're talking about like a presidential race or even like a Senate or maybe congressional race, you know, then the kind of platitude, you know, radical messaging, it works because it fires up a volunteer base, and which is necessary to do any kind of a big campaign because you need ballot access and a whole bunch of other things. Where if you're running for like county legislature or something like that, if you're running like an actual winnable race or like a mayor or something like that, you need to be running on a platform that if you win is actually going to mean something. Right. If you're actually running to win and you're telling the people that are voting for you that you think you're going to win, that you're actually trying to win, you have to be able to tell them what's going to happen if that happens. And yeah, I'm so going to end the Fed is not real. Like,
that's what I was going to say. If you're running for like sheriff or something and you run on end the Fed or something stupid like that you have no control over.
You got to find what matters to the people that you're actually running for. I mean, that's kind of like marketing 101, is getting to know your audience. And if you don't do that, you're just shooting yourself in the foot, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to get into the presidential race because that's an area of disagreement we've had online. And I think there's actually a little bit more agreement in the reality of the situation, but I think we just disagree on what is tactical for going forward. So I agree with you, John, that we can't win the presidency and that we shouldn't have all the resources going toward the presidency. But Americans are dumb and they don't pay attention to who's running for state legislatures or even like federal office from their state. They only pay attention to the presidential run. So in my mind, we should run someone for president who can generate a lot of energy. In my mind, it's a useless endeavor if we don't run someone who can gain attention. So like if Adam Kokesh wins the nomination, it's a joke. Like why bother? Nobody knows who Adam Kokesh is. Nobody cares. He can't like generate excitement. I think Dave Smith or Justin Amash could generate a lot of excitement and attention. And so when you have that attention, you can use that to bring these ideas to the forefront. And you can also advertise the down ballot candidates. So like, if say we had had a high profile candidate in 2020, which we definitely didn't, but say we had someone who had gotten a lot of press, they could have said like, hey, we've got a race going on in Kentucky with Brad Barron. You know, we've got a race going on in Utah with John Molnar. We've got a race in Arkansas that's really close with Ricky Harrington, and also put a lot of resources into those campaigns. So if you have someone who can generate their own attention, which both Justin Amash and Dave Smith can do, they don't even necessarily need the Libertarian Party to bring that attention to themselves. Like when Justin Amash said he was going to run for president, instantly he was on Bill Maher, MSNBC, CNN, you know, instantly. Mm-hmm. And then Dave, you know, he can be on Joe Rogan. He could probably be on like Dave Rubin, Ben Shapiro, Jimmy Dore, like all these underground media outlets, which reaches a whole different set of people. But either of them can generate all that attention and bring attention to the Libertarian Party. So if we have someone like that who can run, I think it's still good. So what do you think?
Well, I think some echo there. I agree with you that it needs to be somebody high profile. It needs to be somebody that can draw their own attention. Joe didn't do that. I also agree with you about the down ballot races. I will not really support another campaign that doesn't promote down ballot races almost exclusively. Like that should be almost all of what you're doing. You're messaging yourself and you're messaging the down ballot candidates. That's about it.
And the libertarian like message, like telling people what it is. I think
kind of, but I think that's part of like, I mean, if your platform and the down ballot candidates' platforms aren't the libertarian message, then you're already kind of fucking up.
Right. But I mean, like Joe kind of fucked this up. She was always trying to present the entire libertarian message to every crowd she spoke to, like whatever the pressing issues are, like choose three or four of them. Mm-hmm. And that candidate should be talking about those issues a lot just to, so people are paying attention.
Yeah. But I don't think that we need to. So I guess that's what I meant by, you know, selling yourself. Like as your campaign, like you have a platform that'll have like those three issues. What you don't need to do is actually sell people on quote unquote libertarianism.
Right.
I don't think really at all. That's not a candidate's job. That's like People for Liberty and Yale and the Cato Institute and Reason Magazine. That's what their job is to like really mold minds into libertarianism. A candidate's job is to find libertarians and get them to show up to the polls. That's really all of their job is to show everybody that like 80% of America that's really libertarian, show as many of them as you can in that time period that they're already libertarians and get them to come and vote for you. So I think that Dave and Justin can both do that. I think that Justin would do it. I think that Justin is more valuable on the ticket and Dave is more valuable on the media circuit.
that's why I will most likely be supporting Justin if it comes down to the two of them. But that's really the only reason.
Yeah, what about you, John? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm on board with Justin Amash, president, but that's only because of his high profile, really, and the fact that he was a former Republican. And for me, it also comes with the caveat of if I'm going to support him, I want to see Tulsi Gabbard in there too. Like, I really am dead set on what this country needs right now more than anything for the next presidential run is to see a former member of each of the two major parties come together under one new banner and say, forget everything we disagree on. We're just going to focus on what we can actually agree on and come together to work on that. That really is what the country needs right now, in my mind. And then, I mean, as far as the campaigns and stuff go, I have a problem like kind of going against the whole should Dave Smith even run for president because of the fact that there's so many people that are pushing against it just for the fact that they don't like him as the guy. Whereas for me, it's just a matter of him picking the wrong office. I think the same thing for Spike Cohen, that if we're going to put these people out there who are good, who do have the publicity already and the name recognition already established, I mean, look at what I could do with no name and no financial backing. These guys should be able to blow me out the water and possibly even win these elections. They pick some that are very high profile, and the attention comes automatically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about New York. Here in Utah, we can run for any congressional district, even if we don't live in that district. So I see David nodding his head, so I'm taking it as the same in New York.
I'm pretty sure congressionals are the same. I know state legislature is like that.
So, like, a good example for Dave Smith to run, you want a high-profile race that'll gather a bunch of attention, no matter if he's running for president or Congress, just because of who he's running against, go run against AOC.
So
that
here's
race
the
alone would gather a bunch of attention.
So that's something that actually really bothers me, because Larry Sharp lives in her district. So there's been, like, a bunch of people that have wanted him to run for that, because he literally lives in her congressional district and he won't do it.
He'd be another one. Why are we wasting our resources and on the presidential run when we should be running for congressional runs that can gather just as much attention for the local area and actually possibly get these people in to win? Because I didn't hear about libertarianism from a presidential campaign. I heard about it from Ron. I got started on it with Ron Paul when he was in Congress. I mean, maybe
yeah,
I'm old enough to remember that.
So I think, I mean, we agree on the presidential race, though. Like, I don't think we should waste resources on it. I think we should have someone who can generate the attention it needs. Like, that's why we shouldn't run a no-name and try to – I mean, that was what was so dumb about – I mean, I was having all the congressional candidates on my show. I had at least half of them on. It was ridiculous that I was able to get them, and I'd get like 40 views per video. They'd still come on. It was, I was like, are you serious? I mean, the, like, Brad Barron, that should have been a race they were really invested in, because early on he had like 10% in the polls against McGrath and McConnell, and they just, there was no publicity. I was constantly spamming his stuff on Twitter, and, you know, had him on my show or whatever, and we were putting all this media attention from the Libertarian Party toward Joe, and it was a waste. So I agree with you. If we had had Justin Amash in 2020, like, we wouldn't have had to do that. It would have come on its own, and then you can use the resources for down ballot candidates. The reason I think I'm gonna, if Dave runs, the reason I think I'll support him is because I don't think Justin Amash is necessarily going to change anybody's, or not anybody's, I shouldn't say that. He's not going to change as many minds, I don't think. You know, he might get votes from 20-year Republicans or 20-year Democrats or whatever. I think Dave, with his audience that he could get, he could really get to the young people who are in college, who are like straight up Marxists right now, and they listen to someone like him who changes their mind. You know, Ben Shapiro has changed a lot of people's minds in negative ways. I mean, some of it's positive, I guess, but it's mostly negative, you know, and it's just because of the type of audience he has. Mm-hmm. And I think we really need to latch onto that. So even if it is Justin Amash who's the nominee, like we really need that underground media outlet, because that's where we can really get people who are going to be susceptible to libertarianism, because older people can become libertarians. Like it sort of happened to my dad. But for the most part, if you get people like in their college years, that's when you can really change their minds. And I just don't know. I think it matters if they're running for president. It shouldn't, you know, it should matter if you have a show and you're gaining that and you're getting that crowd anyway. But if you actually run for president, it brings a lot more attention to you. So that's why I would probably support him. So,
well, I think, like that's why I mentioned that I want Dave on the media circuit. I think there's no way that we do anything meaningful in 2024 without Justin Amash and Dave Smith going to all 50 states preaching libertarianism and pushing whatever the libertarian ticket is in 24. We need them both. I think that they're almost equal as candidates. I think Dave is about 10 times more useful than Justin Amash is in a support role. And that's the only reason that I think that it should be Amash over Smith, because I don't think Justin has the ability to support Dave Smith's candidacy the way that Dave Smith has the ability to support Justin Amash's by going on Joe Rogan and Jimmy Dore and all these other places talking about Justin Amash, talking about libertarianism, talking about the campaign. I think he just has so much more value outside of the candidacy, where Justin is just kind of like, kind of meh. If he's not the candidate, you know, he's just, maybe he's the VP candidate, or maybe he's like another candidate, or he's some, like, you know, if he's not a candidate, he's just kind of meh, you know. He really isn't anything without that, where Dave is something without the ticket.
See, and that's the thing, like, if Dave's so good at it, why should he be out there gunning for somebody else? Like, I want to see him go for a seat he could potentially actually win. And I think he could do that with Congress. So I don't think when it comes to Dave that we should be waiting until 2024. I want to see him jump into Congress in 2022.
Because or governor. There,
or governor. I wouldn't.
I'd be okay with Smith Sharp for New York. That would be a pretty sick ticket.
So when it comes to Congress, I don't think we have time to take over Congress. Like, we just don't. I mean, like, it'll take 100 years to get enough people in Congress to make a difference. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, the thing with Congress, though, is whether we can make a difference or not inside Congress, a lot of the American populace sees Congress as the entry level into politics. And so if we can get just that one win in Congress, that trickles down and fuels the whole perception with masses for every single other race, local, state, eventually POTUS. Like, who knows where it could go. But once people start actually seeing us win on the federal stage, even if it's just one, then all of a sudden the thought process goes from the libertarians are a joke to now, okay, the libertarians can actually win. And that spreads a better message than anything else we could possibly do, is by actually winning.
So I do agree that the Congress is seen as a stepping stone, or at least state legislature is seen as the stepping stone for the populace. But I kind of agree with Reed that we don't really have time. Like, Amash gave a good description of what Congress is really like for libertarian. And it's not really something that we can do much with. I'm a big proponent of running for executive. Yeah. Right. There is no Congress. I'm a big fan of running either state legislature. If you live in a small state where you can actually take over your state legislature, you know, if you live in like Vermont or Wyoming or something like that, where this is a doable thing, do that. Otherwise, like, county executive is such a powerful position. People don't understand how much power a county executive has, how much fuckery a libertarian county executive can actually do. Like, people don't quite grasp that, but it's a winnable election for a lot of people that know their community. Like, if you're in your community, it's a winnable election if you're putting in the work, if we actually put our resources in there, and you can do a lot of fuckery.
You can do a lot of fuckery once you get in there, but how many people actually pay attention to who their state, county, city reps actually are? Like, when I was out campaigning, a lot of them don't even seem to know that they have state representatives. They know there's a governor, but that's about it. Outside of that, they'll pay attention to Congress sometimes, and then president, absolutely.
Yeah,
but right. That's my point.
You want a high-profile race that'll send that message that libertarians can actually win, it's got to be governor or Congress.
Well, I think the key is both. You know, you need like a Dave Smith running for governor of New York and a bunch of people running for county exec underneath that. And I think where I'm kind of getting at is like maybe we cut out the congressional level so that we can push people up to the more noteworthy campaigns and down to the winnable campaigns and stop messing with the kind of in the middle, which is kind of neither. You know, because not a lot of people even really know who their congressman is.
Either. Depends on the race, though. And it depends
You're right. You know, like I agree that running against AOC would be something big. Like that. That's completely set aside. You know, when it's if it was like Carolyn Maloney, you're running against. You know, it was another New York City congressperson. It's like nobody would give a shit.
That's the thing. You don't have to pick every single Congress.
Read it, neocon.
Take over Congress. Just pick 3 to 5 of the most contested races and the most heavily watched. Like, take those, put good candidates in there, back those candidates, and give them all of our effort that we can. We might actually be able to win one. And even if we can't do anything once we're in Congress, we get nothing else done. At least by having won that race and doing nothing else, we've at least sent the message to the American populace that the Libertarian Party can now win.
Any of the trolling I'm getting from Olivia Rondo is well deserved because I've been doing it to her on Twitter. But yeah, you know, just the daily seconded bigot checking in. So, anyways, yeah, go follow Olivia Rondo on Twitter, guys. She's great. She's got a good sense of humor. So, can't ask for that everywhere.
Endorsed.
Yeah, second. I kind of agree with you, Dave. Like the bottom and the top, like the top tickets just got to run to get the positions that can actually make a difference in states. Because I get what you're saying, John. Like, they'll care if we win a congressional seat, but by the time that makes a difference is going to be years from now. Like if we overhaul Congress, I just don't see it happening soon enough. I just think the country is going to fall apart before then. So it seems like just getting people into the state houses who can push nullification or decentralization or even secession talk is kind of the best move, because anything else is just a waste of time in my mind. But I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I'm alarmist and everything's going to be fine. We're going to exist 200 more years as a country. I don't know.
I don't know if I'd say that, but I think it would definitely be a lot easier to get those people into those state, county offices if people have seen the libertarians win in Congress. You just have that trickle-down effect where the dominoes would start to fall and people would start to be looking for libertarians, taking them seriously as they can now win. I want to see what they can do at my local level, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll agree that if we could get a congressional win, that would be something amazing. It's a weird idea though that a group of like decentralization localization activists would be advocating for like focusing on a national campaign or even a campaign for a national office. When basically, you know, the whole point is localization. I think that there's definitely an argument to be made that nothing teaches libertarianism better than having an entire like city's government be run by libertarians and have it actually work super fucking amazing.
We're an oxymoron. Our existence is oxymoronic. Libertarian yes. party. Like, that yes. right there doesn't make any sense already. So.
But the thing is, you take over a city. It depends on the city that you can take over. I mean, if we're taking over some small little mine town that nobody ever hears about, then it's not going to make any type of difference. If we could take over something like, you know, Miami, San Diego, a big city that actually gets that type of publicity, then yeah, well, but we're going to be climbing up a pretty steep hill to get there.
Well, I think it would make a difference for the town. That's the point I'm making.
Right.
I think it would make more of a difference for that town than 5% in a congressional race would. Say at least that.
But would the town be more willing to start coming towards getting that entire libertarian stack up and getting those ideas in their city if they saw a win at a congressional level to give them the idea that that can actually happen because these guys can actually win now? That's where I'm seeing the congressional impact being the biggest, because then people start seeing them win, and then they want that desire more for their local level, not just at the congressional level. We don't need to worry about that. We just need to get the win to show if we can be effective for the local yeah. levels too.
No, I agree that we should definitely be running a couple of really high profile congressional races. I'm just not necessarily confident that we're going to win any of them in 22.
If we can get The Rock and Vince Vaughn to run as libertarians for something, that would be good.
If we could get David Smith to run against AOC, that's something that we could actually do some real shit with.
You know who we really should be talking to is Kim Kardashian with all her criminal justice reform stuff she's pushing.
So, I mean, be real though. There's no way Dave would beat AOC. There's absolutely no way.
You sure?
I don't think so. I think he's more likely to win the presidency than to beat AOC. I'm serious.
I'm seeing AOC as a little vulnerable after how much she's been sucking up to Biden with everything he's done, which goes completely against the stuff she's campaigned against, like the whole kids in cages down across the border. Mm-hmm. She's been quite supportive of him while he's been amping that stuff up. That
well,
opens.
I know, but we actually pay attention. You're talking about like American voters here, so.
Yeah, I think Dave would be able to get a debate with her, though.
The thing is, like, she's controlled opposition, right? Like, she's not anti-establishment. She's not.
No, she's not
the Democratic
exactly.
Party. So they'll cover for her on media. But then she also grabs that anti-establishment vote because people are dumb enough to think she is. Like, I mean, it's just I don't look at it as something you can crack.
Those people aren't that dumb anymore.
A lot of people
anti-establishment votes aren't that dumb.
See, Dave, I have less faith in humanity. Too. I just think people are fucking retarded, so I don't know. We'll see.
I think a lot of people are paying much more attention now than they have for a long time. And there's been a lot of layups from AOC that if Dave Smith just ran against her with his backing, he could go on somebody like Joe Rogan and just slam dunk it. I mean, he might not win the first time, but he'd get set up really well to go again in 2024 and possibly actually win. You know, just go after a high-profile race like that. It's AOC. You'll get the media attention just going against her.
Mm-hmm. That's actually an idea.
Fox would press him so hard.
Even if he runs for president in 2024, he could run against her in 2022 just for the publicity.
Yeah, use it as a launching pad. Just get out there and do it. You might actually be able to win that one.
Doesn't he live in New Jersey now, though? Can he still run in New York?
Does he? I thought he was in New
Jersey. I have no idea.
I think he lives in New Jersey, so I think he moved.
He can move back. It's usually only 6 months long that you have to live there before you can run.
Yep. Come back, Dave. Come back.
New York needs you, Dave.
So in the broader sense, I've wondered like if this is a false feeling I'm getting that people are starting to care about liberty again, because I'm just getting so many messages from people saying like, hey, like I'm joining the Libertarian Party because of you, blah, blah. And that might just be because the show is taking off. So I'm getting this influx of people. So from outside the bubble, maybe things are still just as ridiculously dumb as they were before. But are you guys seeing a growth in desire for liberty, or is that just me? What do you think, John?
I mean, California's Governor Newsom's getting recalled. So I think that's a pretty good idea. Like, honestly, that stuff is getting me excited. I might be able to go back home to California at some point soon. I think with everything that's going on, there's a pretty big split starting to happen, and it's a pretty drastic rift in this country where we're starting to see a lot of contention. There's a lot of concerns about the other person being so evil, trying to control your life one way or the other, no matter which side you fall on. And I think people are looking for a bit more of that freedom and trying to stay out of each other's way a little bit more. But we've also got some issues with everybody clashing so hard that it makes it a little tough to say for sure.
Yeah. What about you, David?
I think a lot of people are waking up.
You've been riding this wave. You've been riding this wave a little bit too. Like, so I don't know if you're in the bubble like I am, but
There's definitely that. There's a bunch of people that are hitting me up and being like, "Hey, saw your show and blah blah blah." And the city council candidate that I'm working with right now, I got to his place last night and like meeting in person for the first time, and he's like, literally greets me. He's like, "Ah, I watched a couple episodes of your show, so I feel like I know you already." And I was like, "You did what? Why? Don't do that. We're supposed to work together and have a professional relationship." Fuck. But he seems cool, so it's good. I think that a lot of people are waking up. I honestly don't know that it's liberty necessarily. People care about themselves and each other and less about the state and the government. Like, people just have less
liberty right there.
I don't know that there's
a liberty, at least.
There isn't a bigger focus on liberty. There's a lesser focus on statism. It's shifting to the middle, but it's not really, not a lot. I don't think quite as many people are coming over to the other side.
Hopefully we're just kind of getting to a point of everybody stay in your lane, just mind your own business.
That's kind of liberty oriented.
Be beautiful. So.
It would be fantastic. Like, I mean, there's been some of those comments on Twitter lately from some of the far leftists talking about, like, "All right, you know what? I'm just going to keep wearing my mask. Let me alone. Let me leave it. Let me wear it." It's like, yeah, that's what we wanted to begin with. Like, you wear a mask, I'll leave you alone. I don't wear a mask, you leave me the hell alone. Really, well, kind of simple.
I mean, if they wear masks forever, they're going to be less likely to be attracted to each other, and they're less likely to reproduce. So, I mean,
and then we can outbreed them.
Exactly.
I've become very much more pro-choice after this last year, just because of that. Like, you know what? These people choosing to stop reproducing is just self-preservation at this point.
Yep. Yes. 100%.
That's a valid point.
I don't know. Reed and I, you don't want to bring that up. Reed and I get into some weird places when we talk about abortion.
Oh, man. You got to watch episode 80 sometime, John. Just go watch. I mean, maybe after this, like, have a few more drinks, keep smoking, like, get way off your rocker and then go watch episode 80.
Yeah.
Good time.
Olivia, if she's still watching, she can vouch for us. That's our best episode so far.
Yeah. Go figure out why Christians should all be huge fans of abortion and also school buses crashing.
Yep, that's episode 80. Yep. It'll explain all of that for you. It's just a pipeline straight to heaven with no possibility of fucking up. So Christians should be 100% pro-choice. But anyways, everyone go watch episode 80 if you want to be disturbed. It's worth it.
Sounds like a good time.
But I don't really have anything else to talk about. That's about it. I just had to get my live stream on Free Speech Media, which if everyone's watched this on YouTube, go check out Free Speech Media on Facebook. But I'll be having Brad Palumbo on tomorrow. That just materialized over the last few hours. So check in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But I've got in the description, I've got a link to both of these guys' YouTube channels and Twitter accounts. So go follow them. But I'll just give you guys each closing remarks. Anything else you want to say? So, David, why don't you go first?
Thanks for having me back on. It's been a little while. And it's nice to meet you, John. It's very weird that we haven't actually encountered each other on a podcast
yet. I didn't even know you guys hadn't met each other. We've just done overlapping things. I figured you would have. Oh, okay. Sorry, hey, John. This is David. This is John.
It's nice to meet you as well. Glad we could pop the cherry on the show.
Right. I will have to have you on my show. I've been meaning to reach out and just keep, you know, being a bum. So that happens.
That's life. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, guys, go check out the show. There's has been quite a few pretty dope episodes up in the last couple of days. I interviewed Satan and then Dave Smith and then full service sex worker talking about sex workers' rights. And then I still don't know who I'm having on the show on Tuesday, so stay tuned to figure that out.
Actually, since the last time he's been on, he's had a lot of people on. He's had like Scott Horton, Carrie Wedler, Eric Brakey, Olivia Rondo. I don't know, a lot of people. So go check out Fight for Liberty. He's not tooting his own horn very much, but he's had a lot of high profile people. So go check him out. Mm-hmm. And John's cool too, don't get me wrong. what about you, John? Any comments? I know you're escaping to Florida, so
yeah,
lose sight of you for a few weeks or something there.
Possibly. So we're probably going to be road tripping out there because we've got my wife, a baby, two dogs, and a cat. So we figure we're going to rent an SUV and road trip it out there. I'm probably going to take all my camera gear and film a lot of the road trip and stuff to have some cool stuff to show for the absence. So that'll be coming up. But yeah, the main thing I'd want to say closing remarks is Dave Smith, please run for Congress against AOC and go from there. I'm kicking back up my YouTube channel. Took off for a little while after the campaign, but we're getting it started again. So you can follow me there or you can follow me on Twitter. Stay in touch, and then as the move goes, we'll shut down a little bit, but we'll be kicking back up in even higher gear once we finally get settled in with the move.
All right, cool. Well, like I said, guys, I will have Brad Palumbo on at 3:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time tomorrow. I think I'm going on Shane Hazel's show on Tuesday, then I'm having him on here on Thursday, and I also got in touch with Nick Gillespie today. And hopefully we'll be getting him on the show. So stay tuned. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so. And check out Free Speech Media on Facebook.